Hi, welcome to episode 6 of the Ozcast podcast. I'm Nightwolf12. Cool Katie and Leprechaun are out for this week, but we have Strutter joining us, and Indie Fairy will drop by soon to accompany me as co-hosts. This week we have Zeta Zasko on the show, and we'll be asking him about a Red vs. Blue video game project he is heading up with a couple of his college peers. So, welcome to the show, Zeta, and hello, Tim.
Hey, thanks a lot, boss. Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Thanks for having me.
How's everybody been?
Good, man, good. I've got a lot of work to do, a lot of study, but still happy to come on the podcast.
No, yeah, I've been up since about 5 a.m., and it's 12 a.m. the next day now, but yeah, I'm firing a full throttle here, so I'm good.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, it was a bit awkward trying to get this this episode going, because, like, Leprechaun's too busy to co-host right now, which is to say that he really just wants to play Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary. And if not, he's working this weekend.
Man.
Oh yeah, he's got it sorted. And then, well, yeah. So then, like, I got Tim here was ready to sort of fill his shoes immediately, and then I got Indie Fairy to come along for this episode, but she got held up at work, so we're just one person short right now. But things are going fine for now.
We can handle.
No, I concur. Yeah, I think we can manage here.
Yeah, we can do it.
All right, well, I think we're on a good start so far, but so is the Hindenburg, so let's see how this turns out. What have you guys been up to this week?
What does that mean?
Don't hurt your brain, Strutter.
We're going to explode. Oh, God, the humanity.
Oh, the huge manatee.
Led Zeppelin, man. That's what I was thinking.
Or that, yeah, sure. But yes, what have you guys been up to this week?
This week, work as always, plus, you know, school. It's funny, now that this game is starting to get a little bit more momentum going, I got a lot of people coming up saying, hey, I hear a rumor going around about this game. I'm like, well, maybe.
It's a lot of campus buzz.
Campus, and believe it or not, a lot of Rooster Teeth fans. You know, there's not a lot of, people from the community at the school, but, I mean, there are fans of the show, and they've heard rumors about a game being created somewhere, somehow.
So that's you're being cool. Sought out.
Oh yeah, it's kind of nice, you know, strutting, start getting a little bit of swagger everywhere I work, everywhere I walk now.
You're that guy.
Yeah, strutting when you walk is pretty fun to do.
Oh yeah.
Talking from experience there, Strutter.
Oh, years of experience. I'm second nature to you now.
Nice.
Have you guys been seeing any movies or playing actually any of the video games that have been released recently?
Well, I saw Contagion on the weekend.
So oh, yes.
I really enjoyed that movie. Because it was, like, I watched Outbreak when that came out, you know, whenever that did, years and years ago.
Outbreak was, like, Morgan Freeman?
Yeah, I think so. One with the monkeys in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that's the one, holy cow.
Yeah, man. I think I saw that in, like, 2003 on television.
Well, yeah, like, what did I say? I watched it, you know, years ago when it came out, and I enjoyed it. Because I just like that, you know, whole scenario. And then Contagion was very similar to that. But it was more, you know, modern day. And I'm doing science at university now. And so one great thing about it was that I understood a lot of the stuff that was actually taking place. Which seemed to give it, you know, another level to the movie. And that was great. I really enjoyed it. You guys should probably go watch it.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, that's one I'd really want to catch for sure.
I'm going to catch the Contagion. Interesting.
But right.
But also, hypochondriacs, be very aware.
Oh, man. So, I remember one guy, like, from... He used to be on the Rooster Teeth community, he kind of still is now, but he's a hypochondriac, and, like, I made a joke to him once that was just in reference to cancer, and he just lost his mind for an hour and a half. I was just like, dude, calm down, it wasn't even directed at you.
Dude.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I haven't had a chance to, watch any movies just, you know, because of the workload and everything. It's funny, though. Well, here, I don't know about everywhere else in the country, I think it's like or in the world, really. We have what they call dollar movies here. Wherever they play the movies for a while, they take them to the, you know, to the knockback theater, and you can kind of watch there for a buck as opposed to paying like $10, you know?
Yep.
And, the cool thing, though, is that, you know, any movie that missed, dude, it's like a second chance to catch it. Well, anyway, my buddy and I, we've been trying to catch the Planet of the Apes movie, and it's been sitting there for about a month now. And the funny thing is, like, every time we try to make it happen to go see it, something happened. And actually, this past weekend, his car breaks down while we're halfway down to the theater, on a Saturday night. It was crazy.
Oh, great.
So obviously some thing out there doesn't want you to watch the movie.
Yeah, exactly, and, exactly.
He's forcing up to.
I actually did get to see that in VMAX for free. VMAX being is like the second biggest cinema screen in the state of Victoria. Next one up is IMAX. I got to see it for free just simply because my sister and her boyfriend gave me their tickets. And so I was just like, woohoo!
Oh, nice, nice. Is it worth me trying a third time, or should I just stay away from it just for voodoo purposes?
Well, you know, if you're only paying $1, I'd say go ahead. Because otherwise, for me to go see any movie, really, it's $18. So, like, Australians get robbed at cinema, but we get robbed in pretty much everything.
Well, I get the student discount, and that brings it down to, you know, $15. So
yeah,
it's not really that helpful.
Now, I was riding the whole concession fare thing up until I got a ticket given to me on public transport due to a miscommunication from the university I was attending earlier this year.
What, to say that you were actually a student or something?
Yeah, they just, like, apparently just having your university card doesn't count as a concession entitlement thing. So they, like, even though the university told me otherwise, I mean, technically I shouldn't have the university card still around, but it's like, you know, it's good for a year, you know? It's like having a coupon and not using it.
Oh, yeah,
you
milk it for all it's worth.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
But yeah, if you're going to go see the movie for $1, I'd say go ahead. And it's a good movie. It just gets really, utterly ridiculous, which is kind of expected when you have the concept of talking intelligent apes. But once you get to the third act of the movie, everything just sort of like really goes crazy.
I thought it was a pretty cool movie.
See, that's the thing, though. I mean, I'm a Chuck Heston fan, so I've been around, you know, Planet of the Apes for a long time. Like, I even liked the Mark Wahlberg, and up until, like, the very end, I was like, oh, geez, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's for entertainment purposes, but, you know, I don't want, you know, my hand to get chopped off on the way there the next time, you know.
Man, I remember seeing the Mark Wahlberg one, because that was directed by Tim Burton, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing that as a kid, and, I mean, I saw that with my dad, and we loved the cinema, and, I mean, I had to be, like, 9, and I was just shaking my head at the ending.
What, you didn't get it, or you didn't understand? You didn't
no, I was just thought, I, like, I was a kid taken to see a science fiction film about, like, talking intelligent apes, and even I thought the ending was bad.
You know, I think, you know, just for the most part, you know, kids in general nowadays are a lot more savvy. I remember I have a niece, right? And she was telling me about The Last Airbender, and she just critiqued it all to, like, Rotten Tomatoes bad. You know, it was so funny.
Like the live action? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, she's like, no, this was wrong, that was wrong. And this is coming from, like, an 11-year-old kid, you know?
I've only heard bad things for that movie. I've never heard anything good. At all. Sorry.
Yeah, that was just the key disappointment of 2009. Or was it 2010?
Oh, nice. I think it was
way back
10.
When. Yeah,
2010.
Well, it was a long time ago. That's right.
The point is, it's not worth remembering.
Yeah.
See, exactly right. You guys ever take, like, a bad movie and try to make it good? Like, you know, you walk into the theater. You know, you order yourself a, you know, the super large Coke. You spill out about half of it, and then you open up one of those little bottles of rum in the middle of theater.
I have not
or is that just like a Navy thing? I don't know.
I have known some friends who have done that, but, like, usually whenever I take a bad movie to make it fun, I either get a couple of my brothers together, or I'm watching a movie with friends, and I just riff on it throughout the entire film. Because, like, some people kind of watch a film, they start talking throughout it, and they're just not funny, but some people can actually pull it off. And when you get, like, a group of people together to just crack jokes at a movie, it can work out pretty well and be a pretty good time for everyone in the theater.
Holy cow, you're absolutely right. I do that all the time with zombie movies. I don't know why, but I just love watching zombie movies in the theater for that sole reason. Everyone else is just like, oh, damn, that's disgusting. I'm over there just laughing hysterically.
I would really like to go to a zombie flick sometime, and just when you see, like, a horde of zombies rushing at somebody, I would just love to shout out, "'Cause it's Thriller! Thriller night!"
And then that song actually comes on in the movie, they start dancing, and then you freak out.
Now, usually I'm the one yelling, "Take that, you dumb bitch!"
Yeah, it's like, your fault. Why the hell did you do that? That's so dumb.
That new Walking Dead show is getting pretty good.
Oh, man, yes, that show makes me wish I was still in America. Actually, there are a lot of things that still make me wish I was in America, but that's one of them. Because I was in America for season one, and then my cousin told me when season two started, and I was just like, oh, man.
Wait,
aren't those on Netflix, though?
We don't have Netflix.
Oh, balls, that sucks.
Yeah. Another reason why you want to get back to America?
that was the point, yes.
Yeah. Whoops. Yep, well, the good thing is I live in a university campus, and so we have this big network over here where everybody that lives on the campus can share movies and TV shows across the entire campus. And so we have, you know, certain people dotted around the campus download, you know, the latest episode of The Big Bang Theory or Family Guy, South Park, The Walking Dead, Doctor Who, etc., and then they put it up on the server so that everybody else can grab it, which is so great. And I've sort of stopped watching TV now because everything that I want to watch is within fingertips. Made me even more lazier.
Oh, heck yeah. So you guys heard about the CDs being taken off the market completely by the end of next year, right?
No, actually.
No, I had not heard that.
Yeah, I heard it this morning on the radio. They were talking about, after December of next year, that's it for CDs. Everything's going to be online.
Yeah.
You mean, just audio CDs?
Yeah, just CDs. Yeah, you know, like, bands and stuff, all their music, all their albums, whatever, is going to be online, you know, for downloads and, you know, iTunes, what have you.
Huh.
They're not going to make anymore? They're going to stop selling them? Like, because that would put a shit ton of businesses out of.
Well, I think they're probably going to end up falling in the way of, like, vinyls, man. You know, they don't really make them, but, you know, you can make them somewhere, and they're going to be selling them, you know, in little CD, you know, stores, what have you now. I would imagine so.
True, but vinyls are still around mainly because it's, like, a culture, because vinyls are actually surprisingly better quality over CDs. So I don't think CDs will go the same way as vinyl.
Well, you never know. There's always a market for it somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's really something I'll have to sort of, like, believe it when I see it, because I have trouble figuring out how that will be implemented, at least outside of a national scale.
Yeah, it's absolutely nuts, though.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know if it's just in America, or if it's, like, worldwide?
I would imagine it's worldwide, especially if it's all these, you know, record labels and everything that's going to be doing all this.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that pretty much sets up everybody in Western nations to just sort of follow suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotta love that standard. Oh, yeah, speaking of standards, have you guys kept up with all this, what is that, that sit-down stuff going on over in Wall Street?
Oh, the Occupy Wall Street movement?
Yeah, all that's crazy. Like, today they actually started walking around and, you know, today's the day of action, so to say, and it's just been kind of nuts in New York today all day.
Yeah, I really don't know what to make of that, because, I mean, I check CNN and, like, a whole bunch of websites every now and again, and I always see stuff about the Occupy Wall Street movement, but I really just don't know what to make of it, because there doesn't seem to be any distinct leader of that movement itself. So it just seems like it's a presence, but it's just kind of hanging around and is now being made into an internet meme.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, unfortunately, you know, this is just, you know, my own personal observations. I mean, that's what kind of goes on whenever, you know, there's like a touchy subject. They just kind of put it on the in the foreground for a little bit, then just kind of blow it off. You know, it's crazy. But yeah, time. I mean, it's, you know, it's some pretty intense stuff. I mean, because you see the massive draw of crowds they have there. I mean, you're talking like million man marches, like a ton of people everywhere. It's nuts.
Mm. I tell you what I have been paying attention to in regards to the Occupy Wall Street movement is what's been going on in Oakland, because the police reaction to the protests over there have just been crazy.
Yeah, I haven't heard about the one. Oh, there's also the one in Portland, I heard, is another one. There's one in Seattle. I don't know, they're just starting to pop up everywhere. I don't know, for me they're kind of annoying, but, you know, that's just me. I kind of got turned off of politics a long time ago.
Fair enough. I used to be really avid about politics up until, early this year, mainly because I just found that I was pissing a lot of my friends off whenever I would talk about it. But I'm still, I still have an interest in it. And so I look up So every now and then I'll find myself watching my brother streaming an episode of Bill Maher, and just kind of keep in touch with like political conversation, what's going on there. So the whole Oakland situation is very interesting to me, especially just because of this. There's been incidents where like one guy was hit in the head with a tear gas grenade, just for walking around. But yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, I guess pretty crazy. That's pretty crazy. One thing I did see though, they were showing a couple of Wall Street, you know, stockbrokers holding up signs out there, you know, that, you know, and they started protesting against the protesters, and you see them shouting at each other, and that actually kind of made me smile, because then that's when I tell myself, you know what, that's exactly what needed to be done, because that's when you start seeing policies being said, you know, things moving and happening.
When somebody reacts, is that what you mean?
Yeah, when they start debating back and forth right there in public, you know, that it just shows like, okay, you get to talk, now I get to talk, and then all of a sudden, now that they're barking at each other, they start talking to each other, instead of just one guy walking by like, okay, whatever, loser, you know, now he has something to say, bring something to the table, and again, that's kind of how, you know, things start happening, things start moving. Hopefully, you know, something will happen, something will come out of this instead of just people getting arrested.
Hopefully. But that's it. I think I do remember actually seeing, like, somebody had clipped together a couple of images of the Occupy Wall Street protesters and then the Wall Street, like, counter protesters, and clipped it together so it looked like an exchange between the protesters and Statler and Waldorf from The Muppet Show.
Oh, nice. Yeah, speaking of Muppet Show, I gotta admit, that's one movie I am kind of looking forward to see.
Yeah. My oldest brother has told me that he wants to specifically get blazed and walk into that movie.
Nice. That's actually a pretty good idea.
The funny thing is, I just kind of looked at him and I said, you know, I'm pretty sure Jason Segel would approve of that. You know what I did see recently?
What's that?
Moneyball with Brad Pitt.
You know what? Tell me about that one. That's the one I did want to catch. What's up with that one?
Moneyball is a movie about the general manager of the Oakland Athletics baseball team, Billy Beane, like during the early 2000s, and how he used this method of assembling and trading baseball team members in order to create an efficient and champion baseball team without focusing on spending money on the players. Because what they did was they figured out that there were a lot of talented players who were being overlooked due to like talent scouts looking at somebody and saying, yeah, they're a good player, but they're missing this personal element that has nothing to do with the game, and then just kind of skipping over them and then getting caught up. Getting caught up on these really insignificant matters, which they kind of cover in the film through through a couple of exchanges with talent scouts when they're trying to select a baseball team. It's about how Billy Beane and his assistant manager created a sort of a World Series type baseball team through using this sort of overlooked method of managing a baseball team. I'm trying to remember what the name of it was, but you could look it up. I can't remember right off, but it was extremely fascinating. Yeah, I think that's all I can really tell you about it in that respect.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I thought it was absolutely amazing. But though, it's kind of strange because it has this huge build up to it, and it's like a movie where even if you're not a huge sports fan in any way, you'll enjoy it, and probably even more so than actual baseball or sports fans will enjoy the movie.
It's kind of like Jerry Maguire type of stuff here we're talking about?
Well, kind of. I mean, there is an element of that, but because it's an Aaron Sorkin film, so it focuses on people instead of, say, a baseball club.
Right. I got you.
If Aaron Sorkin doesn't ring any bells to you, and I'm looking at you, Tim, he's the guy who wrote the script for the Social Network movie. He also did A Few Good Men.
I saw A Few Good Men. I didn't see Social Network, though. That was the Tom Cruise lawyer one, wasn't it? A Few Good Men?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one.
You can't handle the truth.
Yes, that's correct.
Yes. All right. I did good.
See, and plus, I've always been a Brad Pitt fan, and, you know, okay, this is just between the three of us, right? We're not recording this or anything, right? I've always been a Brad Pitt fan ever since Legends of the Fall. Fell in love with the guy in that movie. That movie, oh, beautiful, beautiful movie.
Which movie was that?
Legends of the Fall.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Yeah, it was one of his first roles a long, long time ago. This was like early 90s, and it was actually very good. It's a real good story about, you know, these three brothers and their dad, and it kind of goes through this whole deal. But, you know, if you really want to see, like, Brad Pitt's, you know, acting chops, definitely check out that movie.
Fair enough.
But people would just be, like, wanting his chops, his action. Just edit that out.
Oh, God. Tim, just get out.
Just edit it out. I don't want that going on the internet.
Nope, too late. It's all being recorded. Especially the embarrassing parts.
Yeah.
Here's cut. Here we go.
Ah, hey, there we go. Indy Fairy is now on the TeamSpeak server. She'll be joining us in a moment.
Hi.
Hello.
Howdy.
How's my mic? Is it okay?
Yep, it's good.
That's cool.
Cool.
Now, Z, you were about to say something.
Oh yeah, Brad Pitt, his production company actually bought the rights to the book.
World War Z? Yes, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, because he got into a bidding war with Leonardo DiCaprio's company over it.
I'm so glad he took it over. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, they're in pre-production for that now. They've tweaked the story a little bit, but which was kind of necessary because I don't really know how you could take World War Z as it is and turn it into a 2-hour film.
Oh, you know, you're thinking cooler would be it's a huge book, man. That's what I'm hoping they'd make it into a trilogy or something.
Yeah, which I wouldn't mind seeing.
I'll be there with you, laughing in the back.
I don't think I've heard of World War Z before.
It took a bit in the drunk tank.
Yeah, probably one of the times that I tuned out.
Right.
Would you like a quick rundown then?
If you want to, it doesn't really matter.
All right. Well, for those who are interested, World War Z is a book by Max Brooks that is specifically about, like, it takes place after a zombie apocalypse in which a journalist goes about collecting the kind of witness accounts of various survivors of the apocalypse in order to assemble a chronology of events.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh, and Max Brooks, in case you're wondering, is Mel Brooks' son.
No way, is it really?
Yeah.
That explains a hell of a lot. Thanks, dude.
Not a problem. I actually have his book, The Zombie Survival Guide, in my room here somewhere.
Oh, right on. Yeah, I remember
I'm prepared.
When I first moved to Seattle. There you go, dude. When I first moved to Seattle, I remember the roommate I had there for the first, like, 3 weeks I was there. Him and his girl, they had a copy of it, and we were talking about it, and I was like, yeah, I really want to read it. He's like, oh, I have it. Do you really? Like, that later on that night, after many pitches of beer, he throws it in my head, and I just pick it up, and I just start reading all night long and sobered up. It was so funny.
Man, I read that, like, in 2006. I introduced it to a friend of mine named Jordan, and when he, like, got towards the end of the book, we started finding ourselves in sort of these in-depth discussions about whether or not the book was actually fiction or fact, because Max Brooks kind of starts writing as if he believes all of what he's typing down towards the end of the book as he's giving a history. So my friend was like really freaking out about it.
Oh, yeah. No, heck, dude. And it's funny. Ever since then, I've always looked at news like, okay, that looks like it might be a zombie apocalypse happening right there. Yeah, because in that book, he tells you how to spot, you know, possible, you know, infections around the world. It's so funny.
Mm, yeah. Now, sorry to just quickly deviate from that subject of zombies and whatnot, but I think I've got a more important subject for us. You guys all seen episode 20?
Yes. Yeah. Wait, episode 20 of what?
What do you think, Shredder?
The Walking Dead? You're talking about The Walking Dead again?
No. Yeah, we're back on the zombies now.
Full circle, baby. Oh, yeah, heck yeah, dude. Saw that shit.
Yes, we all saw it.
And opinions.
Awesome. Well, I had, like, as I was watching episode 19, like, not much happened. And I was remembering back to, you know, the previous seasons where the story would, like, you know, jump up so much more in the last two episodes. And I didn't seem to do it in this season. So I'm thinking something has to happen in episode 20. Something huge has got to happen. And then, you know, sort of the memory unit failed, which I assumed would have happened. And then it was, you know, the last 30 seconds of the episode that I was like, oh shit, here it comes. Something's coming up. So I thought it was pretty big.
Yeah, there was a bit of build up for it, for sure.
I'm not really one to pay much. I don't try to deconstruct and figure out things as I watch something. So I was watching episode 20 and I was like, oh yeah, okay, this is, you know, it gets to that certain bit, and I was like, oh, yeah, okay, it's going to end here. Oh, what the fuck, Bernie Burns, why are you doing this to me? So I just, like, burst into tears because of something that had happened, and then this thing happened, and I started screaming. I was like, you, oh, my God, it was, I just cried myself, but... That's a typical reaction for me to anything red versus blue anyway, so.
Yeah, because I remember you telling me that when, like, you, Katie, and Sean were over at RTX and there was that that screening of the first few episodes of Season 9, like, you and Katie were just kind of crying during that that opening escape scene with North and South.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I can't remember if we cried or not. I think we almost did. We got pretty upset. That was fucking sad, man. Shut up.
What? Wait a minute. What part made you sad, though?
Yeah.
When was it sad? Can I can say this, can't I?
Yes, you can say it. Yes.
And if you're listening to this and you can't figure out what it's talking about, then stop listening. Which one is it? North? When he went up on the top and he was going to, like, he's all, like, battered and injured and everything, and he pulls off his helmet and goes up and did the
bubble shield,
the shield thing, and I was just like, oh my god, like, I thought he was gonna die. I was like, that's so fucking sad. He's like, he's barely conscious and he just staggers up there, and it was just, oh my god, it was just so,
yeah, that was pretty sad. And it was, you know, he's injured and he's dizzy and he's still, you know,
and he just, like, keeps pushing himself and goes up there, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh, were you really? Holy cow, I had a totally different feeling on that. I was like, yeah, stupid sister, get in the way, and now the brother has to clean up his ass.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, I guess guys watching it would have been like, oh, this is fucking awesome, bitches all over, blah, 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 and the girls watching it are just like, poor guy, he's gonna die.
See, but this is coming from somebody. Okay, I'm number family of six, so there's always a lot of sibling rivalry going on around here, so I'm like, ah, typical.
Yeah. I guess it's the individual thing. I'm just too emotional for my own good.
Like, for viewer discretion, please do not stop listening to this podcast, and contrary to what Indie Fairy was saying at the beginning of her little tangent, we would prefer if you listen.
You can't say that now.
I can.
And if everyone stopped listening, you can listen now. It's okay.
Yes.
That's it. Mopez, turn your ears back on.
Remember, I have the power to edit everything you say.
Oh, you can put this in front of what Ainsley said and...
come on.
I'm really more of using that as a threat, Strutter.
That's all right.
Damn.
It'd be funny.
Tim doesn't understand threats.
He just gets flustered at everything.
Moving on.
Just don't ever become James Bond, because you would not survive.
Oh God! Can you imagine Tim to, like, reenacting Casino Royale? That would be the worst poker face ever.
That would be adorable.
Oh, man. I think I can do it. You guys don't have faith in
Although,
me.
Although...
No, not at all.
You know what,
I don't think anyone.
You know what? I'll give it a shot, dude. I'll be Lashif for you, man. How about that, man?
I swear, I thought you were about to say that you were going to be whatever the chick's name was.
Money Penny?
Oh, okay. Get into the dress. All right.
Vesper?
Yeah, I'll score that dress. Sure, what the hell?
Vesper, yes. Yeah. So if you're going to be the chief and I'm James Bond, you want to do that torture scene first? Fangirls, you know, riled up.
wait, Tim. You find out that you're going to be imitating James Bond. So the first part of his role you want to reenact is the part where he gets his balls crushed.
Well, you know, movie magic. They weren't actually hitting him. It was all a ploy and. Oh, I don't know. Yes, that's exactly what I want.
I feel really bad for starting this tangent now, because it's gone to a good place.
I think it sounds like a funny idea. We should make it. I don't know. We should make a video about that.
Anyway, I was going to say, okay, so Ainsley, pardon me for a minute, but I'm going to just deconstruct Season 9 quickly. Not going to go too far into it, but okay. I'm just going to go ahead. I think we can all agree that not much really happened this season in Red vs. Blue. Would you guys say that? Yeah. Yeah, because it does seem that like we were given a series of red herrings. I mean, you had Lopez kind of going about trying to figure out the seismic activity, and it seems like they were going to approach that plot line very directly and at a reasonable pace, and then they just decide to just, you know, blow his brains out. And then they just kind of hung around, and the plot with the freelancers, like, obtaining the briefcase, really just... It just seemed like a couple of guys stole a briefcase. The significance of all of that is still kind of left up in the air. And then we were kind of given that cliffhanger, and it was just like, well, touche.
Yeah, well, that's what you have to do, like a good hook. A cliffhanger is, you know, like sometimes there'll be a trilogy of films, and in the second movie, not much really happens. It's, you know, it's just meant to be the bridge and, like, pulling new things in to be shown, then it's most of it up for the, you know, the thing that's coming after it. So
like a setup.
I think every series needs something like that. Like, there's always that one that when you think about it, not much happens in it really. Like, I just finished a book that's the second in like a trilogy or something, and it was over 400 pages. It was a young adult novel, and they focused more on the emotional reactions to things. And then when you get to the end of the book or you get partway through, you're like, hey, there's not actually much happening here, but it's setting it up for everything else. So I think it's kind of cool because you don't always want to be like, oh, yeah, this is a season where everything happens. And this is a season where everything happens. So
yeah, no, I agree. Because, they did have a very similar approach in regards to going through the plot in the last few seasons and whatnot, so it was a good idea for them to mix it up. That said, I was really tempted to butt in on your whole rant on the having that little area in a trilogy where nothing happens. I just really wanted to say, yeah, Helm's Deep was such a crutch.
Nice.
That's exactly what was going through my mind.
How long did that scene take? Like, that whole fight? Helm's Deep? That was about 30 minutes or 40 minutes or something.
Yeah.
It was like the end of Pirates of the Caribbean 3. Like, the ship-to-ship fights took at least 25 minutes. And they're all still going down on a big, like, whirlpool. Mm-hmm. And it took them 25 minutes, and they still survived. Pretty good continuity.
I blame the crew. Honey, it's a very crew, is what it is.
Yeah, we've got the Navy man who can clarify that.
You could accept that there was such a thing as Davy Jones bringing dead sailors back to life and turning them into sea creatures. You could accept that there were pirates, that a sea goddess could be turned into a woman and then back into the sea again and cause the, what was it called? Maelstrom.
But the fact
that they were in that maelstrom for 25 minutes or more and survived, that we have a problem with.
This was back in the 1600s, wasn't it? Like... Long, long time ago.
Yeah, but back then, maelstroms weren't as strong as it would be now.
It could have happened, you know.
Look, you know what? I think that if we're going to argue about the naval battles in Pirates of the Caribbean, we should probably turn this over to the person who has, most Navy experience out of all of us, and that would be Z.
Oh, that no, leave me out of this one. Man.
Sorry, I've thrown you and your Navy service right under the bus here.
Yeah, duly noted, man. Go for it.
Or under the hull.
Oh!
Hey-o!
No!
There's a good, I guess you could say we keel-hauled him in this episode.
Oh, there you go.
But a bing. Yeah, I mean, it just really takes, you know, the right piloting. There you go.
There we go. Matter settled.
Okay. I can actually bring up a historical event. This actually happened in 98 when my ship was pulling into Melbourne. There was a huge, huge storm. And caused this little fishing boat of four people to capsize that was starting to sink. This was around 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, and this was about 50 miles outside of Melbourne. And at the time, there was nobody around except for my ship, and then this, I think it was like a tanker, I think is what it was, a tanker ship. And so we're out there trying to do circles around this little bitty boat, trying to find exactly where it is. We actually find it, and we get our helicopter out there, and on the middle of the storm, you know, the helicopter has to take off, and, you know, granted, it's not smooth sailing there, so the helicopter pad is rocking, the ship is rocking, you know, the helicopter leaves, picks up everybody, comes back, and then has to handle that sucker, too. So, I mean, yeah, it really does take a pretty strong crew to make something like that happen, so I think we could probably survive a maelstrom, no problem.
Okay.
Zing.
So, now, as you did put it right, there was a lot of other things about that movie that probably
Vinny,
didn't
happen
in real life.
Well,
it's not meant to make sense. How did we get on this fucking topic?
We can drop it if you like. We can talk about
other
production that is in the works at the moment.
No,
that
wasn't... Like the one I'm about to start doing my new makeup for.
Oh, yes. Have you got a show tonight?
Yes.
Yes, all right. And you've got to, like, you've a couple of minutes, right, to go?
Oh, in about, 15 or 20 minutes, I think. 20 minutes.
I got a bit of time, then.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's just enough time for us to quickly go over asking Z about his video game project. If you guys are cool with that.
That's what I was originally going for, but Sean didn't really take, like, my segue into account.
All I got was Pirates of the Caribbean and then Naval Battles, and here we are.
Right, season, yeah.
Nice.
Cool.
I'm not the best with hidden social cues, Tim. You gotta remember that.
Oh, right.
Well, you said production, so that automatically made me think that you were talking
about
mine.
I heard production, and then I thought hair musical as well.
God. Well, no, you know what? I was actually lying.
I think you've established that.
I was lying. I was actually talking about Ainsley's production here. So...
Oh, there you go. There's the rub.
There you go. So it's all worked out well. And
anyway, Zeta, just quickly give us a rundown of what your project is exactly.
My project is a video game. That's a pretty quick rundown there.
Okay, but like, what's the video game of? What's it about? What are you doing with it?
Well, the video game itself is actually a puzzle slash action adventure slash 4-player co-op game with the red versus blue characters as the forefront there.
Oh,
very cool.
The premise is pretty easy. You know, just get from point A to point B through certain checks. Just imagine playing Legend of Zelda, where you have to go into the cave and try to figure out the whole map. And but this time you're doing it with three other people, and each of you has a job to do.
Kind of sounds like Portal in the Halo universe with red versus blue thrown in.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. I was trying to incorporate as much team play, much co-op into this project as much as possible, and that's what I came up with. Everyone working on it, we're all on the same page, and every time I just start, to them about it, they're all just like, oh, heck yeah, everyone gets pumped up, everyone's jazzed up, and yeah, we're just all pulling in, just firing full pistons, trying to get this stuff done. We're kind of trying to set up some kind of timetable to have at least one playable level by the end of this year, beginning of next, like December, January. So, yeah, it's coming together fairly quickly.
Very cool. And now, when you say we, I know you've got a very impressive crew working on this game itself. How did you come to get so many programmers and like even motion capture students all together to get to work on this one project? Because, I mean, this isn't even for school credit. You're just doing this for the sake of it.
Right now I go to Richland College over here in Dallas, and it's pretty much the best college for, video game design and whatnot. We're in the Texas area, really, just because you have so many talent there. You know, even the teaching staff is just amazing. However, there is a class out there called project development, and they're actually sit down with 20 some odd people in the classroom and to figure out how to create an actual game or what have you in that in that class. And I have yet to take that class, and I keep hearing back a lot of mixed feelings about that class, how everyone doesn't really get to do what they want to do. You have programmers who are sitting there trying to do a 3D modeling, you have 3D modelers trying to do animation, you have animators trying to do programming. And so a lot of these guys, a lot of these students in those classes don't get to show off, their stuff. They're always tasked with something that they don't really want to do. And so being able to pull in some of those resources and tell the guy, okay, look, here's a chance. You want to be a 3D modeler. Here's your chance. Hey, you want to do rigging? Here's your chance, And yeah, it gets everyone really quickly on board this project. And yeah, it's been positive. Everything's been pretty positive.
So what's your role specifically in it?
Director, producer, lead game designer, level designer, storyboards. It's actually a pretty loaded question. We're just starting off, so I'm kind of having a task on I'm trying to take on as many tasks as possible right now, and that's why I'm just trying to find more people so I can, you know, take a lot of food off my plate, so to say.
So you're pretty much just doing everything, or at least getting everything started before you can.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Especially with the concept art that I have to do, you know, the motion capture guys, you know, they want to start working on what they want to do, but they need, you know, my cues as far as, okay, what exactly is going to be the motion for this type of alien that we're going to be using, or what's this arm going to be able to do, and what have you. It's pretty intricate, but it, like I said, it's so much fun. Everyone's so hungry for something.
That's cool.
So how many people do you have working on the project with you right now?
Currently, I have there's about nine of us. My 3D modelers, I have Mike Smeltzer, Dave Mask, and Esteban Tijerina. Motion capture guys is Alan Barger and Emmanuel Garcia. And I have two programmers right now, Jane Bowles. She's going to be in charge of the heads-up display. It's going to be pretty wild. And then San Chao, this real cool guy. He just makes magic happen every time. And it's level design, this cat named Jason Lear. He's actually a writer. You can actually look up some of his books online. It's pretty cool. He's helping me out with some of the level design. And, you know, so that's pretty much the technical side of it. My brother and his wife, who are both police officers, are going to be doing a lot of the acting for the motion capture guys. It's pretty fun stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say so.
And so how many levels have you planned out so far? I mean, didn't you say in one of your journals, or if anybody else who's been following you can keep up to date with this project via Zeta Zasko's journal on his profile. Like, in one of your journals, didn't you say that you're only planning, like, two levels?
Yeah, that's correct. Two levels, one interior, one exterior. Just the reason for that, again, is just looking at the time frame. I kind of wanted to keep everybody, you know, moving and shaking, and especially, you know, with the semester about to be over, they're going to be hungry. Everyone's going to be hungry to do something, you know, and that's what I've been running into a lot of. There's a lot of people who want to do something, and then I start quizzing them about, you know, what exactly what it is, what are your goals, blah, blah, blah. And then they start saying, well, I don't know, I don't have a lot of time, you know, I'm busy with school, I'm busy with work, you know, family, what have you. And so for now, I think just so to keep everything in a digestible form, we're just looking at two levels. I mean, however, and you know, here's the cool part, though. I mean, if this does, you know, expand quite a bit and people are wanting to get more out of this, then by all means, we're ready to fire up a few more levels. I mean, we already have stuff in the pipeline, but again, I'm just keeping everybody down low, like, okay, let's just focus on these two first, and then we'll go from here.
Very cool. And, like, so once you've got these two levels done and everything's pretty much set, I mean, what's your manner of distributing?
That's going to be for discussion, you know, with the group, you know, when that time comes. Right now, what I'm trying to do, like I said, get at least one playable level, so I can present it to you know, the Rooster Teeth guys out in Austin, and just to kind of let them know, hey, here's what's going on. I mean, if anything, you know, because it is a college project, you know, everything is pretty much free, which means, you know, as far as royalties and everything, all that stuff, it's pretty much out the window, since we're not going to be making money off of it. However, you know, if the two levels do, and like I said, there's a lot of hype, then we'll start talking about, you know, Xbox Live, possibly.
Very cool.
So you don't get money for it at all? Like, you don't get money to oh, well, I guess I'm thinking in more of a hands-on way, you know, whereas, like, you know, like an artist can be like, oh, I'll do a painting or something for you, but just pay me for the materials I use, and they wouldn't make any money off of it, but you're not getting any money for it at all?
That's correct. At this initial point right now, exactly what it is. For all of us, this is a portfolio piece. You know, a lot of times, a lot of these companies, they want to look for, you know, a finished game or something that you've done on your own. Well, this is a good, and again, this is a good way for all of us to be able to utilize all of our resources and bind them all in an effort to, you know, put them out there. That's pretty cool. You know, and again, when the time comes, if we were to make money off of this, then yeah, everyone will get a piece of the pie for sure.
Make it
cool.
Now, sorry, Strutter. Just with how you were saying that you, like, everything's pretty much coming out of your own pocket, like, that includes some of the software development kits you've been using, like, that you actually bought some of that stuff for your programmers and whatnot to use to develop the levels, correct? Like what, and specifically what software development kits have you been using?
The two main ones are for the 3D modeling, we've been using Maya, which from what I understand is free online, and then also UDK is the main engine that we're using. And again, that's free as again, we're all broke-ass students over here. Where we can.
Fair enough.
Now, however, though, again, if this goes into, you know, something a bit bigger, then there are other engines that we can use, and those will cost a... It's funny, I did the research for it. It does cost, but it's not, you know, tremendous. So it is very much doable.
Cool. And Tim, you were about to ask a question?
Oh, God, what was it? Yes. What's sort of... like, relation does it have to Red versus Blue? Like, are we going to hear their voices as the characters?
That's correct.
Oh, cool. Like, will you be playing as some of the, like, Blood Gulch guys?
Again, I don't want to give away too much just because I want there to be a lot of Easter eggs for everybody. But, initially in the beginning, you're going to be able to select who you want to play, you know, and... Yeah, just a matter of, you know, who you decide. What will end up happening is you just kind of go the whole course. And you'll be playing as your favorite character. And again, hopefully once, like I said, I have the playable level, go present to the guys. And actually, I spoke with them at RTX about doing voiceover work for us. And as soon as I mentioned that it's a student project, they were all on board. You know, if it's for students, I'm like, heck yeah, let's do it.
That's awesome,
yeah.
That's totally Matt. So how did you, I know that they, Red versus Blue is obviously using Halo, which they would have needed permission to use. So did you have to get permission to use their characters for this? Or because it's a student project, are you just doing it? Because it's non-profit, I guess you can just use it. Is that correct?
That is correct. Because it is nonprofit, we can use the Red versus Blue characters. Now, regards to all the Halo universe, we're pretty much throwing all of that out the window and creating our own power armors, our own aliens, our own everything from the ground up.
Oh, that's awesome. I like that.
Yeah, matter of fact, the lead modeler for the power armor, he's gonna be done by next Wednesday, so that'll be the big unveiling for, you know, what these guys are going to be looking like. And that's the initial setup with color and everything. See what you guys think.
Very cool.
Like, you had a picture up recently of just, like, half of the person, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's I think, the Mark III version. And, yeah, it's actually grown, or should I say, it looks meaner. I'll say that, you know, for sure.
Cool. Yes. Where are you? Like, are you going to have it on the computer to play originally, or like, are you going to put it onto the Xbox? Because I'm assuming you'd have to pay some sort of money to get it onto the Xbox, right?
Yeah, that is correct. We'll be money invested into Microsoft to be able to put it up on Xbox Live for sure.
Yeah.
But I just figured that'd be the easier way to kind of get it distributed to everybody, as opposed to, you know, creating a, you know, a disc and a box for all that, and this way you can kind of reach everyone's hands a little faster.
Right on.
Plus, you'd probably have more people wanting to get it that way, because, you know, say one of us wanted to get it, we'd be like, oh, but if we want to actually buy a physical product, we'd have to have it shipped, and, you know, the cost of that would probably put some people off. So that sounds like a good idea to put money into the Xbox instead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That was my idea.
Trademark. That is this guy. 2011.
Right, you heard it here first, right?
Yeah, this is it. Oscast exclusive.
Now, Tim, do you have any other questions for Zeta?
I think I'm all done.
Okay. I still got a couple of questions. First off, just with, like, the game itself, is there any... Because I know it's only two levels, but is there any story to it?
Yeah, there actually is. You guys remember watching that one trial episode that they did with RT Animated?
Oh, yes.
That was great.
Okay, so you kind of see how that story didn't really correlate with anything that they were doing. It was just kind of a mock-up, you know, story, so to say.
Yep.
yeah, there you go. That's pretty much the take I decided to, you know, I told everybody about. Everyone was asking, so what story are we going to do? Are we going to do this one or that one? And no, I just told everybody, let's just focus on the characters from seasons 1 through 5, again, just to kind of keep it a little bit more controlled, you know, and there we just kind of opened up the storyline. And funny thing is, it just happened with this one instance where Church has a misfire, and that was it. The story wrote itself.
Awesome. Nice. So, with your team of programmers and animators and mocap guys, who amongst you all sort of like brings ideas to the table when actually designing the game? Are you the main drive behind it, or is this really a group effort in the creation process?
Oh, it truly is a group effort, and that's what I love about this team. Everyone always brings something up to the plate. They say, hey, how about if we do this? How about if we do that? And everything is always up discussion. That's what I really love about this team. You know, no one's afraid to say anything. No one feels like their one thought is going to be less than anyone else's. It's a very Arthurian, you know, team. You know, it's like a round table. It's pretty vicious. It's a lot of fun. We feed each other.
Well, that's fantastic.
That's kind.
Oh yeah. Now I admit, though, there are times whenever people start going off, you know, the deep end, and I have to, you know, bring them back to the surface. Like, okay, let's bring it back for a second, you know. But it's fun though. It's definitely a lot of fun. There's definitely a lot of team effort involved, and that's what's enjoyable for me anyway.
All right. And before we decided to do this recording here today, I contacted you via private message on Facebook to quickly ask you to come up with a kind of pitch in order to actually sell your game to us. Like, to imagine that we are your potential audience, and then you just try to sell the game to us. And would you be ready to deliver that pitch?
Oh, dang, I thought I just did.
Oh, no.
No, not yet.
The pitch is meant to just like a short sort of quippy thing, isn't it?
No, that's fine. Because, I mean, when I imagine sales pitch, I imagine like what I was doing when I was going like door to door for Doctors Without Borders, and where I would have to sort of talk to somebody and tell them about it in a like a kind of monologue. But no, that's fine. Because, I mean, you've pretty much done a good job of advertising your project so far. So I'll just edit that last question out.
No, you're good. You're good. No, hold on a second.
God, he's going to go kill you. Well, what have you done?
Bring it, Navy boy.
No, I just had to get a drink. I'm sorry. I've been kind of talking my ear off here. But yeah, no, as far as the pitch goes, you know, try to imagine playing a world where it's not just you playing a game, it's you and your buddies playing a game. More so, you have to go save techs.
So it's like putting yourself right into the characters instead of playing as a character.
Pretty much, yeah. And there's a lot of ins and outs to the game where, say for example, there's going to be four of you going in. Two or three of you are going to be assigned, you know, certain duties, whether fourth one is holding off the enemy as long as possible to be able to get through that one particular room or that level. And then at the very end, you have to fight the main boss, and you pretty much unlock Tex. But if you can recount, you know, what happens to Tex when she gets turned back and what she does to everybody, then you find out who the real big boss is at the end.
What a twist!
Well, you've already got Indie Fairy geeking out over it.
What was that?
No, it sounds cool.
There's definitely going to be a lot of people who would be geeking out about, you know, the characters to save Tex.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it definitely has elements.
I just have, like, having, like, one person fighting off all the others sounds really good, because I'm used to playing, like, fantasy RPGs, like Dungeon Siege 2 and things like that, you know, where, I mean, obviously it's just me and then the other three characters in my party are controlled by the game, but, you know, it's, I like being able to have, you know, one person is, like, defending or whatever, you send one person in and the others take their stuff. I think that's a really cool idea. And I don't know, maybe I just don't play enough games with other people, but I don't see much of that around in my circles anyway.
Well, you like a game where there's a gang of people who are all set to certain tasks? Is that it?
Yeah.
See, and that's the thing, though, that I'm trying to create these levels to where it's not just the same one or two people holding off the enemy while the other two are, you know, doing the job. There's going to be a lot of teamwork involved with that.
Very cool. So how long do you plan on the levels to be? I mean, on an easy run-through, Like, how long would it take to go from point A to point B?
It'll really depend on your team. You know, anywhere between, an hour and a half to, 45 minutes. Again, it just depends on how well you coordinate with your team.
So for me, it'll be an entire day.
And I want to do everything I can to keep you on that level too, and also just keep an eye out for tons of Easter eggs. I definitely want to incorporate the Rooster Teeth community in everything as well, so look for names, for little tidbits, look for posters of people or what have you. Just I'm definitely going to open this up for the community as well.
I think what he's saying is that the final revealed boss will be Kraken Fairy. I'm pretty sure that's what he's saying. I'm just kidding.
Nice. Awesome, right? Well,
I think there's a lot of similarities between Tex and Kraken Fairy.
Yeah. I wanted to, again, open this up as much as possible just to get a lot of buzz around it. And, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens with it. But, yeah, it'd definitely be a lot of fun for everybody. And, again, once we can refine it and detail it a lot better, I'm trying to incorporate single player mode in this as well, and that'll actually be a lot longer of an endeavor if you play it by yourself. So I'm trying to incorporate as much multiplayer into this as possible.
Well, it very much seems like a diverse program, or well, at least video game, and so thanks for coming in and talking to us about that. So it's absolutely fascinating, and it's not very often we get guests who are running such an ambitious, creative, and interactive vision.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
Cool.
That was a nice explanation there, Sean.
Yeah, much obliged. And I'll be honest, I know I'm going to probably get a lot of flack, a lot of heat from, trolls and nagmodders and whatnot, but, at this point, it's turned into something more of... It's more for us, for the group, than it is for anyone else, really. It's something where, again, we can show off our skills. And in the end, if we don't make any money off it, if it doesn't go any further than just these two levels, then at least, the few of us that worked on it, we have this nice, piece of portfolio that we can walk in, anywhere and say, okay, you did it. And as soon as we turn it on, they're going to see the rooster leaf, they're going to hear the music, they're going to hear the voices, they're going to be, jaw-dropped, I'm pretty sure of that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even if, this won't happen, but even if no one liked it, in the end, you still did it, and it's a learning curve, which is a really, really good thing. Not everything has to be some major awesome thing that every single person in the world loves, which is, the cool thing. Like, people can find stuff like this that, only a specific group of friends will like, and I think that's really cool. At least, you've got it for your portfolio, and they definitely see how much effort you put into it.
Well, yeah, thanks. And I'm really hoping, I can have something completed to possibly take up to PAX East, maybe RTX this next year, see where it goes from there.
That'd be very cool.
Yeah, I definitely want to get a lot of focus testing, a lot of beta testing for everyone in the community. So you three are definitely on the top list.
Woohoo! Score! In your face, Leprechaun and Cool Katie. Mainly at Leprechaun.
They're going to be on the end of the list. Don't worry about that.
So they'll still be there, but way, way down. So that means that our names will also be, hidden amongst all the Easter eggs. Strutter's a pretty cool name. I don't know if you're not walking into area. But...
Oh, hey, Strutter, you got some brown on your nose?
Wait, I don't get it.
He wants his name to appear somewhere in your video game.
No, I got it, dude. I got it.
No. Damn it. Sarcasm wins again.
Well, I've got to head out, guys. It was awesome interviewing you. Well, partially. And good talking to everyone else. And have fun on the rest of the podcast.
Awesome. Likewise. And good luck with your production. And we'll be seeing you soon when your production finishes to ask you all about it.
Yeah, break a leg up.
Yes. I will have my... supervising doctor pressing the push to talk button for me, because I'll be in a straight jacket inconsolable because the show will be over.
Oh, because it'll be over. Yeah, that's right.
Quick question before you leave.
Like my first wife there. Wow.
Oh. Oh god.
Have fun.
Bye, internet.
Good luck.
Okay, so I think that's pretty much all we've got for questions. Tim, do you have anything left to ask?
No, I think that's about it. We have discussed quite a bit, and we can add anything to it. Nope. What about you, Sean? Anything else?
No, I think I'm pretty much done. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the game before we finally wrap things up, Z?
Well, I'll tell you what, Sean. Quite honestly, one thing I did want to discuss with you about. Remember those stories that you had us write pre-RTX?
Yeah, Project Mirage. I had a feeling you were going to ask about that.
Yeah, well, I kind of want to go over some of those with you, see what you think about possibly adding more to the game.
Yeah, sure.
That wasn't a question. That was...
Well, I'd be more than interested in looking into the matter, so feel free to look into it.
Cool.
Okay, so, thank you once again for coming on to the show today, Z. It's been fun asking you about your video game, and I look forward to seeing some more about it as your video game journals progress, as well as to when it finally gets released in about December or January, as you said. And so, yeah, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, and just be sure to let everyone know, just if they want to keep track, you know, just check out my journals. I'll title them, you know, pretty simply, you know, RVB game.
Yeah, exactly. Be sure to check out Zeta Zasko's profile on Rooster Teeth to follow along the progress.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Goodness. I'll have something for everybody.
Woohoo! All right, well, I think that about wraps things up for this week, so we shall see you guys later. We're out.
Later.
Done. Bye, guys.